see it.
Time for the Hamilton Corner with today's guest host, Brian Fisher.
Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Brian Fisher is my name, sitting in for the inestimable Abraham Hamilton III. Glad to be with you. Abe is off in heading toward Baton Rouge to participate in a Truth for New Generation conference with Alex McFarland. I think our own Mickey Addison will also be down there doing some speaking. So they are, we'll give them an excused absence for something like that. Working with millennials down there, which will be a really terrific experience for them. By the way, read two stories about millennials. My name is Brian Fisher. I think I said that. My name is Brian Fisher. I have a program at 1 o'clock Central Time here on American Family Radio called Focal Point. You're welcome to tune in if you happen to be available around 1 o'clock and want something to listen to. We'd love to have you on the program. Read two stories about millennials. I'm going to get into the word here in just a second, but two stories about millennials today. One of them was that 25% of them, and Jason, I'll ask you and see if this has happened to you, but 25% of millennials said that the 2016 election was so distressing for them that they are having symptoms of PTSD, of trauma syndrome, whatever that is. PTSD. That's PTSD is what it's called, right? PTSD. So they were so shook up by what happened in 2016 that they are suffering from PTSD today. So, Jason, you have any problems with that after 2016?
Not at all. I don't know nothing about that.
Okay, you recovered from that just fine. But the other one was encouraging. It said that the millennial generation is bringing down the divorce rate in America. That they're getting married and they're staying married. They're waiting longer to get married. They're being pickier about the mates that they choose, and they are committed to making their marriages work. And I think part of that is a lot of them are victims of divorce. They've grown up in households that have been ravaged by divorce. They want something different for them. They want something different for their children. Anyway, good to have you with us. We're going to talk about the caravan today. We're going to talk about these bombs that have been delivered to, well, they never quite got there, but they were on the way toward various Democratic politicians' homes. We'll try to break some of that down. A lot of information we don't have about that, so we're a little bit kind of shooting in the dark here, but I'll share with you some of my thoughts about that whole deal. But when it comes to the caravan, I'm trying to remember who it was, said it was unchristlike what Donald Trump was doing with the caravan to think about trying to stop it. Maybe that was John Kasich. Maybe that was Anderson Cooper. I don't know. But somebody going on and on about how unchristlike it was to stop this caravan before it gets into the United States. He apparently wants open borders, let everybody flood into the United States. Now, there's a couple of passages I want to just touch on that I think shed some light to this whole immigration thing. One is a passage that not a lot of people think about. You're familiar with this, but it's in Revelation. And it's Revelation 3:20. You're familiar with this, probably memorized it at some point in your Christian journey, where Jesus is speaking, and he says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me." Now, you may be sitting there thinking, what in the world does that have to do with immigration? Well, let me suggest something to you. Jesus is pictured here in this verse standing out in the hallway, and he's knocking on the door. he would really like to come into this guy's life, whoever's on the other side of this door. Jesus would very much like to come into this guy's life and build a relationship with him, a fellowship and table fellowship. That's what Jesus wants. And he's standing there at the door knocking. And of course, his desire, because he's repeatedly knocking, his desire is that whoever's on the other side of that door will open the door so Jesus can come in and build a relationship with him. But here's the thing. Here's the touch point for immigration for me. Here was a boundary. Here was a threshold, notice, the threshold into this guy's life, the doorway into this guy's life that Jesus would not cross without permission. So here was a sovereign boundary, the boundary that would lead him into this guy's life, and Jesus saying, I will not cross that boundary without permission. I'm not going to go where I'm not invited. I'm not going to trespass into this guy's life. I'm not going to barge into this guy's life. I'd love to go in there, but I am going to wait to be invited. So it's interesting to me because Jesus there, as I said before, he's really recognizing, I think, that there is a sovereign boundary here, a sovereign border, and he's not going to cross it unless he receives permission to do it. So I think that's one element in the immigration issue that even Jesus himself, I think, would say, look, I'm not going to sneak into somebody's life. I'm not going to blow my way through the doorway into somebody's life. I'm going to appeal to them. I'm going to make my case to them. And then I'm going to leave the choice ultimately up to them. So I think there's some powerful implications for immigration there. You know, we believe as Christians, we believe in legal immigration. We do not oppose immigration in general. We don't oppose immigration. Some people accuse us of being anti-immigrant. We are not. We love legal immigrants. You immigrate into this country legally. You play by the rules. You wait your turn. You fill out the paperwork. You're invited in. We welcome you here, and we're happy to have you as a part of our nation, as a part of this American experience. You're here because you want to be here. We're a nation of laws. You've been willing to play by the rules and play by the laws. You are welcome here. And we recognize that legal immigrants, they do enrich this country. But we draw the line at illegal immigration. That's where we draw the line. Now, a lot of people are saying, look, we ought to just allow all of these immigrants, legal or not, illegal or not, to come into this country because that's what Jesus would want us to do. That's what compassion would dictate that we do. And I want to take you, in fact, one of them, I can't remember, I think maybe it was John Kasich, who's governor of Ohio. I think maybe he was the one that was talking about this, and he was, of course, playing the Bible as his trump card. We got to do what Jesus wants us to do, which is to be compassionate. And so we ought to open the borders then to all of these people that want to come into our country. And what Kasich did not explain is how these people are going to be housed, how he expected these people to be clothed, how he expected them to be fed, where the jobs were going to come from for these people to work so that they would not become a burden on the taxpayers of this country and be able to provide for their own families. John Kasich never got that far, but he did get to the Good Samaritan. So this is what the Good Samaritan teaches us to do. Now, I want to read the Good Samaritan story with you and just make a couple of observations because I think this is badly misunderstood, and I think John Kasich is wrenching this story completely out of its context. Now, you're aware of the basic setup there. You've got this guy that's been jumped on by brigands and by thieves. They've jumped on him, they beat him up, and they ripped him off, and they left him lying in a pile by the side of the road. And so you're aware, first there's a priest that goes down by the road. He sees him, passes by on the other side. Levite does the same thing. Sees him there, passes by on the other side. So these were kind of spiritually minded people, religious leaders. And they saw him and they avoided him, went by on the other side. Basically saying that's somebody else's problem. I'm going to let somebody else worry about that. And then the Samaritan, and remember, Samaritans were despised at this time by the Jewish people. They were half-breeds. The Samaritans came when the nation of Assyria came in and carted the northern kingdom of Israel off to Assyria in 721 BC, all of the people in the northern kingdom of Israel, they were gone. They were hauled off to Assyria. The only people that were left were the people of no consequence and no significance and no real talent or ability. And then the king of Assyria brought people from his world in to populate Israel. So they began to intermarry with kind of the dregs of Israel's society, and that's where the Samaritans came from. So they weren't pure-bred Jews. They were half-breeds, half-Jew, and half-Assyrian or something else. And so the Jews didn't want to have anything to do with them. But the Samaritan comes along, and what does he do? He comes to where the guy was. When he saw him, he had compassion on him. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back." And then Jesus obviously is using the Samaritan as the role model in this story. He's the example that we are supposed to imitate. But notice very clearly the difference between what the Good Samaritan does here and what John Kasich and others want to be done with this caravan. John Kasich is not prepared to come alongside these people and wash their wounds and see that they've got a place to sleep and that they've got food, bind up their wounds if they're injured. He has no interest in doing that at all. He's going to outsource that to somebody else. And he wants us to feel guilty because these people don't have food and clothing and shelter. But you notice that the Samaritan didn't do that. The Samaritan didn't say, "Look, this is somebody else's problem." The Samaritan went to the man himself. He took care of him, had compassion on him, showed mercy to him. And then when it came time to take care of him, he provided resources out of his own wallet. He didn't say, "I'm going to expect the taxpayers of this part of Judea to cough it up and take care of this guy." In fact, he wasn't even in his home area. He was on the way to Jericho, so he was in Judea, and he wasn't even expecting the taxpayers in Judea to take care of this guy. He was going to do it himself. Now, that's biblical compassion. Now, realize that the Bible teaches the redistribution of wealth. People on the left in America, they believe in the redistribution of wealth, but in their case, it's involuntary. They want the government, using the power of the state, to rip off some of our fellow citizens, well, all of us really, because we all pay taxes, take money from one set of citizens and give it to another set. Well, that's the transfer of wealth, but it's involuntary. The citizens that are doing that, they've got no say in the matter. It's not a choice for them to do it. It's the involuntary redistribution of wealth. Now, we as believers, as followers of Christ and imitators of the Good Samaritan, we believe in the distribution of wealth, the redistribution of wealth, just as much as our socialist friends on the left do. The difference is we believe that the redistribution of wealth is to be voluntary. We do it not because we are forced to. We do it not because the government at the point of a gun is dipping its hands into our wallets. We do it out of personal mercy, individual mercy, compassion for people who are in our society and are hurting. So we believe in the redistribution of wealth just as much as socialists do, but we believe the big difference is in it ought to be voluntary redistribution of wealth. In fact, I think that probably the ultimate solution to the immigration problem is for churches in America to adopt refugee families, get away from all of this government welfare, and have churches adopt refugee families. Say, "Look, we will assume responsibility. We will assume responsibility for this family. We'll make sure that they're fed, that they're housed, that they're clothed, that they're given an opportunity to get a job so they will not be a burden on the taxpayers. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Indiana asked High Court to hear abortion law case. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. The state of Indiana passed a law 2 years ago banning abortions because of a child's gender, race, or health. But federal courts blocked it. Now the Attorney General has asked the Supreme Court to overrule the two lower courts. One provision of the law, which never took effect, required a pregnant woman whose child would be born with Down syndrome or some other genetic disease or physical deformity to carry the child to term and give birth. The lawsuit over this abortion statute could be the vehicle used by the new Justice Brett Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court's other members to overrule the Roe v. Wade decision or bring back the sanctity of human life in America. Children and women must be protected from death by abortion. We must make the womb a safe place once again. Please join me in praying for this case and stay informed at lc.org. That's lc.org.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit afa.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 bans discrimination on the basis of sex, which means male or female. But Barack Obama changed its meaning to include gender orientation and invented a prohibition against discrimination against transgenders, people who are so confused mentally they think they are trapped in a body of the opposite sex. But the president is directing the DHS to develop a definition that is determined on a biological basis and is unchangeable, a definition that would indicate that sex is determined by the genitalia that a person is born with. You know, the way we have always done it since the dawn of time. The Bible in Genesis 1:27 says just what science says, that there are two and only two genders. The Bible was right then, and it still is.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Howdy, welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Brian Fisher is my name, filling in for Abe, my brother from another mother. In fact, sometimes, you know, it's almost spooky how much Abe and I think alike. It's like there was a mind meld at some point in our distant past. But happy to fill in for Abe. Brian Fisher is my name. This is the Hamilton Corner. Now, we were talking about this caravan, talking about immigration, stuff like that. Here is John Kasich, governor of Ohio. And again, he invokes the Lord here. So, you know, it's interesting to me that the people on the left, they do not want you to bring the Word of God into debates about public policy. If you try to do that, that's a violation of the separation of church and state. You can't do that. The Constitution doesn't prohibit it. As a public official, you're not supposed to do that. We can't have the establishment of religion going on. But when they can find a passage of Scripture that they can twist and turn to their use, then you can forget all about the separation of church and state. They'll wedge the Bible in, their understanding of it, their distorted and twisted interpretation of it. They'll wedge it into whatever issue they are dealing with. So here is John Kasich happily violating the leftist definition of the separation of church and state. Let's listen.
We've got to start putting ourselves in the shoes of other people. We've got to start thinking about the consequences that others suffer. And if we've been spared those by the grace of God, let us be appreciative. Let us count our blessings. And let us reach out to those who have less. And let's stop putting up walls around ourselves and not understanding the plight, the trouble, and the problems of others. Mm-hmm. It is not right, and the Lord doesn't want it. And our people, at their hearts, want to reach out to others. Look at what they do in these storms. They go and they rescue people they don't know. They put them in their homes. They feed them. That's America. Not all this garbage and this division and yelling and screaming and hatred on all sides.
So again, John Kasich saying, he's talking here about the involuntary redistribution of wealth. The Lord does not want us to not involuntarily redistribute wealth. The Lord wants us to take money against the will of people and give it to people they've never met and don't even know. And then he contrasts that with what we believe in, which is the voluntary redistribution of wealth. These people that go down to places like Florence, Hurricane Florence, and deal with the problems there. You know, we have a ministry that was birthed kind of out of American Family Association called 8 Days of Hope. It wasn't birthed out of AFA, but we supported it in the early stages. And they have spent countless man hours down there in South Carolina and other places helping people rebuild their homes. Did the same thing in the wake of Katrina in the New Orleans area. Did it willingly. Did it voluntarily. There is not a dime, not a dollar, not one single penny of government funds involved in the work that 8 Days of Hope does. But when you look at John Kasich, every bit of the money that he wants to go into doing whatever he wants done with this caravan comes out of the wallets of the American people. You know, this goes back to the time of the founding, and it was a significant enough statement on the part of James Madison that I actually wrote it down somewhere. Let me hunt around for it. Here it is. This is James Madison is the one I'm talking about. He was known as the father of the Constitution, and this is back in 1794, so the ink was barely dry on the Constitution, and there had been some kind of major storm in the Caribbean, the Bahamas or someplace like that, and so there were survivors that had come to the United States for refuge, and there were congressmen that wanted to dip into the American treasury, the national treasury, to help these people. And it was a modest sum, even in those days, $15,000. And you know who spoke against it? James Madison, the father of the Constitution. And here's what he said. Here's why he opposed that. I cannot undertake, he said, to lay my finger on that article of the Constitution which granted to Congress of expending on objects of benevolence the money of their constituents. So James Madison says, look, the Constitution does not permit us to do this. And his point is not that welfare is bad, not that charity is bad, but that is not the function of government. That's the function of individuals. That's the function of communities. It's the function of families. It's the function of churches. It's their job, not the government's job, to provide relief to people who are hurting. So that's James Madison, father of the Constitution. Can't get much more Homer. He's the one than whom there is no Homer when it comes to the Constitution. Now, I want to drop down to clip number 7. This is Phil Bredesen, former governor of Tennessee, locked in a tight race with Marsha Blackburn there to become the next senator to succeed Bob Corker, next senator from Tennessee. And by the way, Marsha Blackburn, she's one of us. She's a staunch, strong conservative. She's got a pretty decisive lead now in this race. She's edging ahead of Phil Bredesen. Now, this is Phil Bredesen's communications director. This is not the candidate himself speaking, but his communications director. Now, the audio is not great on this, so I may have to tell you what you just heard, but the question had to do with illegal aliens, illegal immigrants, getting involved in his campaign, and here's what the communications director for Phil Bredesen had to say.
why they should get involved, because this is, I mean, you guys said it yourselves, this is, you know, this is a choice right now that we have, and we can take our country in a certain direction if you choose Bill Bredesen, or we can go back and choose, you know, Marsha Blackburn, who's been very clear about what she wants to do with undocumented.
What she wants to do with the undocumented. And what Marsha Blackburn wants to do with the undocumented is the same thing that we want them to do. We want them to wait their turn. We want to come in to the United States based on the procedures and the laws that we have developed. We welcome over 1 million legal immigrants every year, ladies and gentlemen, well over 1.1 that we welcome into the United States every single year. They come in legally. We welcome them. We've got the most generous and open-hearted immigration policy anywhere in the world, and so they are welcome here. Now, I'm going to shift here to the bomb issue, but just a couple of more things on the immigration front. And this shows you how other nations can do it. Australia, this is a story from on Breitbart, Australia has turned back 3,300 asylum seekers that were on 33 boats. So the law in Australia, we're not going to take any asylum seekers. You try to get to Australia as an asylum seeker, we're not even going to let you in. They have stopped taking asylum seekers, and they have turned back 3,300 asylum seekers and 33 boats in the last 5 years. So they are tightening up in Australia. We've got limited resources. We've got to make sure that we take care of the people that are providing the resources for our government before we start reaching out to people that are sailing here from other places. Now, the caravan, by the way, there's a toll that's being taken on this caravan by sickness, by fear. Some people are turning back. It's now down, they figured, about 3,600 in this caravan. A lot of people just homesick. They want to go back home. They're tired of walking. I mean, it's a monster hike. I mean, I don't know who gave them the idea that this was a smart idea, but a lot of them are wanting to just go back home. And the Mexican government is providing transportation that'll take him back home if that's what they want to do. So a lot of them are taking him up on that offer. It's a mile-long caravan. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why I am actually optimistic about the election on the 6th, because you look at the optics of this for the average American voter. I mean, the average American is a compassionate individual. They want to help the needy. They give to the fund that their church has to take care of needy people. They contribute to charitable organizations all the time. So they do care about people that are down on their luck and need help. So they're not lacking in compassion. American people are a very compassionate people. They give more than anybody else in the world, you know, per capita. But they're looking at this caravan, and even Americans that are inclined to be soft on illegal immigration, they say, man, I just don't like the looks of this thing. It was 14,000 strong at one point. And the American people are looking at the optics of that and they're saying, there's no way that's good for this country to have this many people come flooding into our country. Where are they going to live? Where are they going to stay? Who's going to take care of them? Who's going to feed them? Where are they going to be housed? What kind of jobs are they going to be able to get? So the optics are just bad, and the American people are going to vote here, you know, just in about another week and a half. And I think the Democrats, I don't know if they're behind this caravan. I strongly suspect that there's some George Soros money behind it somewhere, some Democrat ideas and energy, but I can't tell you who organized this thing. But it's amazing that all of a sudden, all at once, 3 weeks, 4 weeks before an election where immigration is an issue, that this whole thing kind of came together just almost magically and making its way across Central America and through Mexico. And I think, honestly, what the Democrats thought is that this is going to work for us, that we'll be able to tag Donald Trump by the way he responds to this caravan. We'll be able to tag him as somebody who's heartless, who's cold, who is ruthless, and we'll be able to contrast ourselves as the people who are the generous, compassionate ones, as long as it's with somebody else's money. That's the basic difference in my mind between a liberal and a conservative. A liberal thinks compassion is being generous with other people's money. A conservative thinks that compassion is being generous with my own money. So this has backfired, I believe, on the Democrats. Nobody in America thinks it's a good idea to let these people flood into the country. And then we're just 10 days out from an election. So I think the Democrats have hurt themselves on this whole deal. Now, a couple of more on this whole bomb business. One more clip. Let's grab clip number 8, Jason, while we're at it. This is Heidi Heitkamp. This is a Project Veritas video, James O'Keefe and his crew talking to somebody who is part of the Heidi Heitkamp campaign. She's locked into a contest with Kevin Cramer up there. Cramer's up by 16 points now, in large measure because Heidi Heitkamp would not vote for Brett Kavanaugh. She voted against Brett Kavanaugh. That's not where the people of North Dakota are at, so she's paying a huge price for it. She's down double digits. But listen to her campaign member. I don't know exactly what the position this person has in the campaign, but listen to how they reveal that Heidi Heitkamp is basically systematically lying to the voters of North Dakota. Let's listen.
After the election, if and when she gets reelected, she's going to be super liberal.
She's going to be super liberal. Chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. So here's Heidi Heitkamp. She's in North Dakota. This is a conservative state. And she's trying to paint herself to the voters of North Dakota as moderate. She's got conservative instincts about guns or whatever. So she's trying to convince the people of North Dakota she's a moderate. Nobody to fear here. She is not a raging liberal. But her own campaign staff says, hey, just you wait. She gets in. She is going to be super liberal. She will be off the charts to the left. Now, quickly, on the pipe bomb business, if you want to start calling and get lined up in the queue, the number to call to be a part of our conversation in the last 20 minutes of the program is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Hannah standing by to field your calls and get you in the system, 888-589-8840. Now, my general thoughts, I'll just give you my general thoughts. I'd love to hear what yours are about this pipe bomb. I don't know what is behind this. I do not think these bombs were serious bombs. I don't think the person behind this, whoever it was or whoever they are, had any intention of detonating any of these bombs and hurting any of the people that were the targets, that were the destinations for these bombs. You know, you look at the ones that they've actually looked at, that they're harmless. Here's a story from National Review about the pipe bomb and the powder delivered to CNN. Listen to this. The pipe bomb and white powder that forced an evacuation at CNN headquarters in New York City Wednesday morning were harmless. They go on to say that the device was similar in construction to those that were sent on Wednesday to Barack Obama, Eric Holder, Hillary Clinton, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and so forth, and Representative Maxine Waters. NYPD said an explosive device that they were talking about at a press conference yesterday afternoon. Turns out those devices were not functional. These pipe bombs had a parody ISIS flag, not a real ISIS flag, a parody ISIS flag. And there was a motto that had the signature slogan from Larry the Cable Guy, get her done. Now, I think whatever they're trying to do, I mean, get her done, you know, and Larry the Cable Guy, he's kind of your friendly redneck type guy. So I think whoever was behind this, I think the whole thing is a hoax. I think it's designed to stir up fear. It's designed to create the impression that Donald Trump and conservatives are behind this hateful, violent attack on Democratic leadership. And so I think that was the purpose of it. I don't know who's behind it. You know, maybe it was a hardcore, card-carrying, right-wing conservative. I will be shocked if that's the case because of the nature of these bombs. They were clearly designed to be found. They weren't designed to escape detection. They were designed to be noticed. We'll be back with your phone calls. Stay with us, 888-589-8840.
Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
The Bible is inspired because its nature is the self-revelation of God. In other words, the authority of the Bible is the authority of God. Behind your doctrine of Scripture is a doctrine of God. The product of Scripture is the activity of God. The Scripture is the product of God the Holy Spirit, which is why God the Holy Spirit uses it in conversion and in sanctification. So what we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source. And because we believe God to be the author of the Bible, we talk about the quality of the Bible as inspired or God-breathed.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
The Divided States of America. This is David Wheaton, host of The Christian Worldview. We live in the most prosperous, powerful, charitable, advanced, free nation in history. And yet, there is a level of aggrievement and division that has not been felt perhaps since the Civil War. Whether the issue is race, gender, religion, sexuality, abortion, immigration, or political party, the worldview gulf between the sides seems too far to bridge. The only hope for a unified America is a spiritually revived people. When Jonah preached in the wicked city of Nineveh about God's coming judgment, the city repented and God relented. Let us pray and work for hearts turned to God. Hear more at thechristianworldview.org and then tune in this weekend for another topic that will sharpen your worldview.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. A pair of physical education teachers are facing punishment in Florida after they raised concerns about a girl using the same locker room and shower facilities as boys. The teachers raised concerns because neither the boys nor their parents were told a transgender child would be sharing the locker room. One of the teachers at Chasco Middle School has been reassigned to another school. That teacher, a man, refused to follow school orders that he supervise the locker room even if the girl was not wearing any clothes. Liberty Council is representing the teachers as well as students and parents. They say the Pasco County School District violated the constitutional rights of the teachers as well as the boys. The young men told school leaders they felt uncomfortable changing in front of a girl who identifies as a boy, but the school ignored their concerns. You can read more about this story at toddstearns.com.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
And welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Brian Fisher sitting in for Abraham. I'll also be with you tomorrow afternoon while Abe is off participating in a Truth for New Generation conference in Baton Rouge, Red Stick, Louisiana. A couple of quick things before we go to the phones. You know, the Democrats have been talking all year about a blue wave. This is a tsunami. It's going to sweep over the landscape. Democrats are going to sweep into power. Republicans are going to be swept out of power. Well, you're not hearing that anymore from people on the left. In fact, here's an article from the Associated Press 2 days ago. In the closing stretch of the 2018 campaign, the question is no longer the size of the Democratic wave. It's whether there will be a wave at all. Top operatives in both political parties concede that the Democrats' narrow path to the Senate majority has essentially disappeared, a casualty of surging Republican enthusiasm across GOP strongholds. You might have seen the results of that survey that indicated that Republicans are outvoting Democrats in early voting. I mean, by massive numbers. The real enthusiasm is not on the side of the Democrats, but on the Republicans. And then one other quick thing, and then we'll go to the phones. I just love this story. Excuse me. Savannah College of Art launched a petition 3 weeks ago to remove Clarence Thomas's name from a building. His name is on one of the buildings at the Savannah College of Art. And remember, the whole business about Anita Hill and all that came up again with him. So these students there decided, we want to start a petition to get his name pulled off of that building. We think he's a sexual predator. We don't think his name ought to be on one of our buildings. So they started this petition, and over the course of 3 weeks, it had picked up 2,400 signatures. Well, then there were some students that said, hey, wait a minute. We like Clarence Thomas. He's a great Supreme Court justice, one of the brightest legal minds on the American landscape today. We want to keep his name on that building. It's an honor to have that building and our campus associated with them. So they started a competing petition. That petition has gathered 20,000 signatures in 6 days. The other ones got 2,400 in 3 weeks. They got over 20,000 in 6 days. So that's a win for the good guys. Something tells me that Clarence Thomas's name, as it should, is going to stay right where it is. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's start with Susan in Tennessee. Welcome, Susan. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to say that I am a naturalized citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Came when I was 2 years old.
Uh-huh.
And then became a citizen at bicentennial year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's wet.
It wasn't as difficult then as it is now. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
And then I was the first one in my family, then my parents, and then the rest of my siblings.
Uh-huh.
However, I also served in the military.
Uh-huh.
Very proud to serve.
Yeah. Oh, great.
U.S. Navy. Met my husband, got married, and then when we had children, I stayed home.
Cool.
So, however, because I'm an immigrant, I have a passion for the internationals. And I even teach English as a second language.
Mm-hmm.
However, our borders are borders. And I'm in favor, how can I not be, of securing the borders?
Yeah.
My country of origin secures its borders.
What's your country?
How can the United States not secure its borders?
Yeah. Susan, what's your country of origin?
Ecuador.
Okay. And they've done a good job of securing, you don't hear anything about Ecuador much. I mean, it seems like they've got pretty secure borders. You know, and 65 countries around the world have built physical barriers along their borders to protect their countries and protect their sovereignty. All right, Susan, and you're voting, you're involved in the whole political process and all of that.
I want to say, because I love internationals, we have always ministered and known internationals. My mom worked in a factory.
Uh-huh.
And she had friends who escaped Europe. And one of her friends escaped, I think she was from Sofia, wherever Sofia is, Hungary, I think.
I think it's in Bulgaria.
Oh, yes, Bulgaria. With nothing but what they had on their backs,
mm-hmm.
because they had to escape at night.
Hmm.
And so they left, and they left quickly. And so I guess that was when communism. It was one after one of the wars.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure they were fleeing communism.
She immigrated to the U.S. and worked with my mom in a factory, blue collar.
Yeah.
But I remember her telling me. She said, "We left with nothing, absolutely nothing. The husband, wife, and their son, infant son, and they just left." Oh.
All right, Susan, listen, I appreciate your call. And, one of the things I believe we have an opportunity to do as Americans, we have international students studying here in the United States all of the time. That is a mission field right there, because these students, most of them, are going to go back, or they should go back, to their own countries. We want this to be a welcoming place for people like the ones that Susan was talking about, have left everything, just clothes on their back, to come to America because of the promise and the opportunity that America offers. All right, let's go to Sherry in Illinois, land of Lincoln. Sherry, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Land of Lincoln. Let's stick with the positive, not talk about Dick Durbin or Barack Obama. I'm with you on that, man. I think, do you remember, in terms of my hope for this coming election, do you remember, I don't know, a couple months back, AFR played a lot of clips about the left speculating on how did Donald Trump get elected? And one person, I don't even know who you played, said that they thought the people were scared. And I feel like I know that the reason Donald Trump got elected was because we, the people, knew what he had to offer.
Yes.
And the sort of shenanigans like they pulled, in addition to him being a businessman and his general strengths, but we knew the politics. We knew the shenanigans that they pulled with this nomination of Judge Kavanaugh, mm-hmm. when that was going on, I just had a strong burning feeling. That's why we elected Donald Trump, because we were tired of that kind of thing. And so I'm hoping and I'm expectant that this election, that's going to have prompted people to be clear and motivated to vote and be clear on who they're voting for, so that we can vote out the likes of Sherry Bustos in my area, mm-hmm. and even her husband for sheriff. And I believe they're grooming Sherry Bustos also, just like they groomed Barack Obama. Watch for her. I don't know anything for sure, but it's an Illinois Cook County corrupt line to the, you know, to the White House, if you ask me. So mm-hmm. those are just some thoughts, and I believe that the character of the nation, I hope, being one nation under God, God will lead us, you know, to the truth, to care about the truth, and to use our system and vote accordingly.
Great, Sherry. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. And I do think the Kavanaugh, that whole fracas, I think, have a lot to do, a lot of impact on this election, because I think a lot of the American people looked at how shallow and empty and superficial and baseless the charges that this Blasey Ford made. There was nothing to back him up. There was no evidence. There was no corroboration. There were no other witnesses. It just had the appearance of something that she'd made up. It was 36 years ago. They just weren't credible. And so I think the American people just got kind of turned off. It's like business as usual. This is what the left always tries to do. And it just turned them off. And I think that is going to be a big help, big assistance for Republicans. The party that put Brett Kavanaugh, that's not about political party per se, but the party that put him in office was the Republican Party and Donald Trump as the president. You want more like Brett Kavanaugh? Then the American people say, you know, we better vote for people that put guys like Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch in office. So I think that backfired, that attack on Kavanaugh backfired big time on the Democrats. All right, thank you for that. Let's grab a call from Joe in Texas. Joe, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Brian Fisher, God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
last night I was in a Frank Cafferty, and he had a guest on that he was interviewing, and he said that the funding for the caravan was coming from Cuba, Venezuela, and the U.S. State Department under the direction of Ambassador Robinson, who was a Clinton appointee and was channeling USAID funds to help them logistically. I was shocked to hear that. And Frank repeated it to him and saying, are you saying that? And he said, yes, I am.
This is Frank Gaffney said so, this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Frank Gaffney is a sharp dude.
Well, he didn't say it. The guy he was interviewing said it, and he was wanted to make sure he heard it correctly.
All right. So you're saying Gaffney probed him on that, and the guy stuck by his story. Yeah. Well, we've heard early reports that Venezuela was involved in funding this. It wouldn't surprise me if Cuba was, and wouldn't surprise me at all if an Obama holdover. That's where the staff of the deep state comes from.
That's who this guy is.
Yeah, Obama holdovers. They're still there in positions, and you can't uproot them all. I mean, this is just a massive bureaucracy in D.C. And so, so they're still out there. You got these Obama holdovers, deep state. They're deeply entrenched in places like the State Department and other places in a position to create a lot of mischief. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's true, and that would be sad but true. If it is that American taxpayer dollars are involved in helping to keep that caravan afloat. All right, Joe, appreciate it. Good information for us all to have. Let's grab a call from Kevin, also down in Texas. Kevin, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Yeah, thanks for letting me speak. I was just going to agree with you mostly on the bombs. I've been around a lot of pipe bombs. My brother used to make them. we never bought people, though. That's the important thing.
What did he make them for?
just to make a bomb. I mean, he bought dynamite. He did all kinds of fun stuff.
All right, so you've seen pipe bombs. You know what goes into them. You know what they look like. So anyway, keep going.
Well, but here's the thing. At first, if you're going to make a bomb, and you're me, now I'm not going to hurt people, but if you're going to make a bomb, it's going to blow up, and it's going to have a trigger. And there's a reason that you make a bomb without a trigger, and that is to make a point, right? It's to communicate something.
Right.
And it's just like taking a bullet. In the old days, the mob would take a bullet and put it in around your house somewhere, and you would know by the caliber and the type, oh, that's the mob. Or they'd put a horse head in your bed or whatever.
Right.
This is just a message to say, hey, we right-wingers are going to get you.
Now, do you think...
All it is a veiled message.
Okay, Kevin, do you think this is coming from somebody? Well, let me ask you this one question. Again, this is educated guess. Nobody knows yet. I think they're going to apprehend this guy fairly soon. But is it your guess, sure, Kevin, that these bombs is the work of somebody on the right, or is it the work of somebody on the left? What do you think?
No, everything that the left does is veiled. And it's usually an attack from the side or from behind you. And so these aren't right-wingers. Just like most of the people that shoot people, they're leftists. And what you'll find out is there's someone that knows someone that no one's going to say anything about, but they're a left-winger. And they're doing this because someone advised them, hey, we want to make the right-wingers look bad right before the election.
So again, I'm trying to be sure I understand what you're saying. You think this is probably the work of left-wingers trying to make right-wingers look bad?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
They will do anything to do that.
Yeah, and that's the way, that's the way it strikes me. All right, Kevin, let's see if we get a couple other calls in. I appreciate the call. Thank you for that. Let's grab a call from Mark in Georgia. Mark, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Oh, I'm so blessed. I feel so blessed to even speak with you, Brian. I've called in numerous times to Mr. Hamilton, and to get through this time and speak with you, because I listen to your other shows. I listen to a lot of AFR, and AFA is a fabulous. I mean, I could spend the whole time I have. I know I need to be brief, but I could spend the whole time that I have and praise God for the work that you all have done.
Well, thank you, Mark, and I'm really glad you got through. So what's on your mind? Got about 45 seconds left.
Only 45 seconds. Okay. Then I'm going to go through this very fast, and I hope that you'll just comment on it afterwards.
Okay.
In terms of the caravan, it's my personal belief that we should stop them where they are, and we have the military and electronic capabilities to do so. We can, disable the vehicles, interrupt the fuel, whatever. Those who have left the caravan, those who wish to stay where they are, we should treat them as the Samaritan treated them and aid them in front of the people who continue on. And treat them as a victim, a possible victim, But the drones or anything else we have are necessary. To the comments on what Kasich said, all I can say on that is, hey, you call upon God only if you can accept his judgment and his mercy.
All right, Mark. Well, listen, I appreciate that call very much. Thank you for that. And my apologies to Isaac and Jill and Ari. Wanted to get to you. Just ran out of time. Hope you'll call again tomorrow. That's it for the Hamilton Corner today. This is Brian Fisher. I have been sitting in for Abe today. I'll have the privilege of doing that again tomorrow. A poor man's substitute, I admit, but I will be back here with you tomorrow. You guys have a great evening. Go with God. God bless you. And we hope.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.